Hello and welcome to another episode of the Migration and Diaspora Podcast, a show about all things migration, with me, your host, Loxanne Harley. Today we're going local. We're talking all about city-level migration governance with Lamine Abad from the International Centre for Migration Policy Development, ICMPD, and Fatima Fernandez of United Cities and Local Governments, UCLG. First of all, a bit about Lamine and Fatima. Lamine manages the Mediterranean City-to-City Migration Project, MC2CM, which he'll tell us more about in a few moments. Previously, he was project officer at UCLG, in charge of mainstreaming migration into local governments' agendas and localizing the Sustainable Development Goals. He also worked for several years within the Arco Latino Transnational Cooperation Network. He holds master's degrees in mathematics applied to social sciences, inter-Mediterranean mediation, and science of organizations and institutions specialized in decentralized cooperation. Fatima, meanwhile, is a project and policy officer in charge of human mobility at UCLG, where she is the focal point for the MC2CM project and coordinates local and regional participation in global processes tackling migration governance. Fatima holds a PhD in regional development and economic integration with a focus on the political economy of Euro-Mediterranean relations. I'm delighted to present to you our discussion about migration at the local level in the Mediterranean context. We start by talking about the relevance and importance of local migration governance and about how so many aspects of policymaking and administration at the city level impacts migrants. We then discuss vertical policy coherence and how to achieve coherence between national and local migration policies. We close with some of Lamine and Fatima's fascinating insights into some of the exciting city-level migration policies and initiatives that have emerged across the Mediterranean. We'd like to thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. Okay, so Fatima and Lamine, welcome to the show. How are you both doing and where are you calling in from? Let's go Fatima first and Lamine.
Thanks a lot. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting us and first response to the questions is I'm doing good and calling from Barcelona where I live and work at United Cities and Local Governments, which is a global association gathering local and regional governments, fostering cooperation among cities and also advocacy for mainly decentralization of many, many policies, among which those related to human mobility and diversity. Very happy to be here.
Excellent. It's great to have you here. And Lamine, welcome. How are you?
Good morning, all good. Thank you very much. Also happy to be with you, Loxanne. I'm calling from Malta, where the Regional Coordination Office for the Mediterranean of ICMPD is based, and where I'm living for 2 years now in okay. The heart of the Mediterranean.
That sounds very, very lovely. Although I must say it is an extremely sunny day here in Southeast England. Almost Mediterranean, but without the beaches, unfortunately. But anyway, it's great to have you both here. Fatima, you gave a very useful quick intro into your organization, UCLG. Lamine, why don't you tell us briefly about what MC2CM does?
Yes, so MC2CM is the Mediterranean City-to-City Migration Project. It's a program that is led by ICMPD, the International Center for Policy Migration Development. We are a European organization with headquarters in Vienna and several offices around Europe and around the world now. The project MC2CM is, as I said, led by ICMPD, but together with UCLG, United Cities and Local Government, represented by Fatima today with us, and also with UN Habitat, the UN Agency for Human Settlements. It's a new funded project, and in particular through the Directorate for DigiNear, and also we have a co-funding from the Swiss Cooperation Development Agency. Mainly the city-to-city program, as we like to call it internally, is a program that links cities across the Mediterranean on migration issues, on migration governance, the urban governance of migration in particular. And I have to say it's the first initiative, decentralized cooperation initiative, that links cities on this topic. There is many programs, projects that work on migration at European level, at North African level, but this is the first and unique in its kind that is bringing together a network of 22 cities now from Europe, North Africa, and Middle East. And what we do basically is we try to support local government to understand their role in terms of migration governance, to see how they can better contribute to the migration policies from their perspective, in particular by supporting the inclusion process of migrants, by providing access to rights and to services, but also by informing the national policies on the local realities of migration. We work along three main axes: dialogue, knowledge, and action. In the dialogue, we bring the cities together on thematic, on specific thematics that they choose. We've been working so far on 15 thematic peer learning events. On the knowledge dimension, we support each municipality in identifying its city migration profile and also in understanding what are the main priorities of the territory in terms of migration governance. And this is also participative work where we engage what we call the city stakeholder group. So it's a group of stakeholders ranging from civil society organizations, academia, migrants organization, or other institutions, organizations working on the topic in the city. And together with the municipality, they try to identify what are their main priorities. And then we have the action component where we launch several call for proposals, and we provide grants to the local stakeholders, municipalities, but also NGOs, helping them to develop this pilot initiative that respond to the priorities they identified.
Really interesting. Thank you for that, Lamine. And I'm very excited to get into that in a bit more detail. I did just want to ask a question that I actually ask all my guests is, what is your own migration and diaspora stories?
Well, I am from Galicia, from the northwest of Spain, so living in the same country where I was born, but from a local perspective, I'm still living in a very different environment from where I come from. But before coming to Barcelona, I also lived in Morocco, in Casablanca, where I did my PhD in the political economy of Mediterranean relations. Before that, I was living in Italy also for a year. So my mobility has been very tied to the Mediterranean in the past 10 years.
Lovely story. And sounds like you've lived in some really lovely places as well. And Lamine, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm Algerian, where I lived my small age. I had also the chance to live several years in France. Then to move from the north of Africa to the north of Europe, because I've been also living 1 year in Sweden. Then I passed a long time in Barcelona, also coming back to the Mediterranean. I also had the opportunity to live in Italy and now in Malta. And as I like to say, I define myself as a citizen of the Mediterranean, and a bit like Fatima was saying, I'm definitively linked to this sea, to this region. And always moving from one shore to the other with the White Sea in the middle.
I can only imagine. And let's get back then to the lovely Mediterranean region. Tell us why this is a dialogue between Mediterranean cities. I mean, Mediterranean cities have a lot in common in terms of culture and so on. And a lot of Mediterranean cities are real melting pots for migration. But from that local governance perspective, what do they have in common?
First of all, we have to see that indeed the human mobility is not new in the Mediterranean. Along the history, there were always been a lot of movement, economical movements, human being movements, and we came up with this program, City to City, also looking at the realities and the transformations that were happening in the region. We have to see that, in particular, North Africa and Middle East were for a long period of time regions of departure or regions of transit for migration. But in the last decades, we also see that these regions are becoming each time more hosting territories. And the idea behind the MC2CM project was really to connect the experiences of the European cities that most of them, not all of them, of course, but most of them have a longstanding experience in hosting migrants, in hosting people coming from Europe, from other regions outside Europe, with these North African and Middle Eastern cities that, let's say, are starting getting each time more experience now, but we're starting back in 2015 to really discover the what are the concepts, what are the needs of migrants inclusion at local level. So the idea was really to connect the cities across the region so they can exchange, they can discuss on the challenges, but also on the opportunities and on the policies they could implement to ensure social cohesion, to ensure that all the inhabitants and all the people that are in that cities could access opportunities, and at the end of the day could become contributors to the development, to the sustainable development of that cities. So really that was the main starting point, looking at the geostrategic situation in the region and at the evolution of countries like Morocco, Tunisia, Jordan, that now they are becoming each time more hosting territories.
So Fatima, I think this is the first episode that we're recording on local migration governance. So I wanted to ask you, what types of migration-related decisions are taken at the city or local level?
Well, thanks a lot for that question, because it is a really interesting one. My first answer would be that all decisions taken at local level may affect migration. Some of them do that directly by addressing migrants and or refugees or displaced people needs. But other times, like any sort of local policy that is taken at local level has an impact on all citizens, all neighbors. And of course, among those are also migrants and refugees and displaced people. In this regard, of course, like if you ask me for the direct ones and more tied to the specific needs of migrant communities, although this is a really wide group of people with very different realities, but we could see, for instance, the provision of welcome instruments and administrative guidance as closest level of government to people is one of those, right? Also, guaranteeing universal access to basic services regardless of legal status, sometimes even creating local mechanisms to curb that lack of a legal situation that allows them to have access to those services. There are also, for instance, mechanisms to also foster political participation at local level, or also anti-discrimination measures. Because as you know, sometimes migration and racism and other forms of discrimination are very connected. Then we see cities, both in the Mediterranean and elsewhere, having offices against discrimination and other kinds of measures to promote social inclusion and cohesion among their citizens. But then, as important as those, I would say it would be like any measure, any decision to foster local economic development and economic inclusion and employment opportunities, both at public and private level, would be a really relevant decision for migrant community and for the decision to migrate or not. Also, any sort of intercultural exchange or creation of collective memories on those shared ties we were mentioning before. Also, providing safe public space for all, an inclusive public space for all, tackling informality, promoting decent and affordable housing. Just to wrap up, I would say that those are just some examples of how the role of local governments is key in a stronger and better migration governance.
That's really interesting, Fatima. And it brings me on to a question about what are the types of stakeholders and interlocutors that engage in this MC2CM dialogue. When I think of my country here in the UK, we have town councillors, we have county councillors, we have mayors, we have local offices that support refugee reception. And so, yeah, what types of stakeholders and people engage in the MC2CM?
Yeah, first of all, the MC2CM engages the municipalities, the local authorities or local governments. So our first contact point is always the mayors, as they are the persons that has been elected and selected by the inhabitant of the city to be their leaders. But then, of course, that we have different type of dialogues. We have more political dialogues where we engage the mayors, the city councillors, and where we try to reflect much more on the policy-making processes and also to make strong statements on what should be or could be the position and the role of local governments within migration governance. But we engage also a lot with the civil servants. At the end of the day, politicians, they are elected, they have a mandate. We never know if they will remain or not. And it is also important for us to invest in working with the civil servants, which usually are there for 20, 25, 30 years. But the dialogues are not exclusively for the local governments. The idea for us is really to bring in these dialogues all type of stakeholders that have a role to play. It starts, of course, by bringing in migrants themselves through their associations, civil society organizations, NGOs, international organizations, but also it is important for us to bring in the national governments or their representations, the delegations in the territories. Because at the end, migration policies remain a duty and the responsibility of the national authorities. And it is important for us that they are part of these dialogues, that they could listen, that they could learn from what are the local realities of migration, and that they could use this information to inform their policy-making processes.
And perhaps you could give us some examples of some of the local migration governance processes or initiatives and so on that the MC2CM has helped to foster or encourage. Presumably, I'm not totally sure on how you work, but presumably you come up with, you try to generate some sort of consensuses and joint agreed approaches amongst the cities that form part of the MC2CM. So I was wondering if you could help us bring that into some concrete examples as to what types of things have been encouraged as part of the MC2CM.
I will share some examples, for instance, from our city members in Tunisia. We have, for instance, the city of Sfax, which has strengthened a lot its role as a facilitator of coordination with civil society. And this has been a work they have been strengthening mainly after some dialogue activities that brought all of the cities of the Mediterranean City to City Migration Project there to analyze the case of Sfax, and that gave birth also to a further conversation with stakeholders, which is still ongoing today, which is also helping elements like data collection or very ad hoc solutions to address the need of specific populations and so on and so forth. And also, for instance, the city of Sousse, which is a very active one. And this, just to give another example that is quite complementary, rather than having this example where cooperation happened more after an activity that was foreseen by the project, is also Sousse calling us after the COVID-19 outbreak, telling us, okay, we have identified a series of needs by vulnerable migrants in very specific situations, for instance, domestic workers, but we would really need to gather more data to find the resources, but also to find the right interlocutors that could help us in the territory to facilitate that. So through that, we facilitated a study to identify the needs and so on, and also to accompany that process that was led by the city itself. Since the starting of the project, we saw also more coordination among those cities and other cities even that from outside of the project in terms of migration governance. And this greater awareness on the weight of migration routes and this awareness that what happens in a city that has also an impact in another city. And I'm sure Lamine can complete this with other examples.
Yes, indeed, Fatima. I think to complete what you said, it's important to understand where we come from. And to answer your question, Loxane, to look at back in 2015 when we started this program, most of the cities we were contacting, in particular in North Africa and Middle East, did not have conscience of their role in terms of migration governance. And I think the first thing that MC2CM has been doing is raising awareness at local level, raising awareness to the city council themselves. On what is their role, how important is their role in terms of migration governance, also creating the understanding that when we speak about migration policies at in the urban level, we're not speaking about migration policies, we're speaking about migration related policies, what Fatima was explaining before, the intersectionality, the how by working on providing access to different groups, to opportunities, to services, you ensure that there is a social cohesion, you ensure that there is a contribution of all the people that are living in the city, and that you ensure that they all can live in decent conditions. So the first awareness raising that we did was this one, and the concrete result maybe that I can give is that if you look at the city of Rabat, when we started the program with them, they didn't have that much relationship with the civil society organizations that were working on migration. And this is a concrete information that went out in our result-oriented monitoring, where it is stated that through this city-to-city program, there were an evolution in the way that the municipality was considering the civil society organizations. And while at the beginning, civil society organizations had to contact the municipality and to wait for a reply to be invited for a meeting, nowadays they are directly invited by the municipality when there is any specific meeting that may be of their interest. So a concrete example and a concrete step that we help to do, and again, not only us, I mean, we have to be humble here. City to City is, I think, a great initiative, but there is also other very important programs and actors that are working on the topic and supporting this dimension. But we supported to generate the ownership of migration, urban migration governance at local level. And then another point, as Fatima was speaking about Tunisia, I think something that really we saw concretely evolving in these 6 years of program is how also local governments started to be empowered to contact their own national governments and to ask them to review, to rethink the decentralization schemes, and to see how the decentralization should be part also of the migration policy. Meaning that, you know, because here we play with two very concrete, different, distinct concepts, which are migration policies and which are decentralization policies. And at the end of the day, what we're seeing now in a country like Tunisia is that the municipalities themselves, they are requesting to the national government to bridge between these two, to see how they can include within the decentralization chain mechanism that allow the local government to be part of the migration policy making at national level. So really here, I think there were a first work that has been done at the local level itself, raising awareness toward the local governments, mainstreaming migration in their own agendas. And I think this has been done successfully. And maybe Fatima later can also explain how now all this is getting also to higher UN level, global level, and where we can see that local governments are taking each time more weight within the international dialogues. But also then empowering these local governments and the local stakeholders to be able to contact and to discuss directly with the policymakers. Because again, and I think it's always important to recall that is policymaking is not done at on migration is not done at local level, but the local level has to deal with the consequences of the policymaking. And what we look at is to see how we can make sure that there are mechanisms that allow the local level to inform the national level, and then the national level to empower the local level to contribute to this national policy.
That brings us on to that broader point about policy coherence. In migration governance, we talk about policy coherence horizontally across sectoral policy areas, but then also, and more pertinently for this conversation, about those that coherence across different levels of policy making. And I was wondering whether you could go a bit further into explaining any kind of insights you've gained about how we can strengthen that vertical policy coherence. So you've just mentioned that point about ensuring that local decision makers or local policy makers are engaged in the process of national policy making. But I was wondering if you could go a bit further into other insights you've gained about how to achieve that policy, that vertical policy coherence.
At UCLG, we often sum that up as having a seat at the table by acknowledging a series of elements that for us are critical when speaking about this governance area. First of all, local governments being the closest level of government to people, so the most informed level of government regarding realities on the ground. Not only the realities of migrants, but also the realities of the host communities and the realities of all the actors that are directly or indirectly involved in this link between human mobility, development, innovation, cultural understanding, or inclusion more generally. So without discussing the fact that migration policies are a national mandate, what we learned from our work with cities and what we see cities reclaiming is a space where they are not only implementers, and they are not just implementers of laws and frames and even like users of resources coming from above without responding to their specific realities that are very different across territories. The idea is that local governments are part of the whole process of policy making and implementation. Just to come back to the specific questions on vertical policy coherence, where we see a real opportunity for that is with the approval of the Global Compact for Migration and Refugees. It is acknowledged by national governments and international organizations that human mobility needs to be tackled from a whole of government approach and a whole of society approach. We see increasingly recognize this role of local governments and the value added they bring to the table, and really the willingness by national governments and international organizations to have them at the table. And just two examples would be at more at the level closer to the compact. We see that, for instance, the UN Network on Migration, which is mainly made of international organizations belonging to the UN system, acknowledges local governments and United States and local governments as one of their key interlocutors. And also, for instance, at a more informal level, there's a what we call the Global Forum for Migration and Development, which is an informal process that has been going on for now 12 years, where states gather every year to discuss on different aspects related to migration and its link to development. There we see also local governments having its own mechanism to ensure substantial engagement of local governments in the discussion, and UCLD facilitates also the link with what we learn in the Mediterranean. And just to finish, what has been key in this process has not only been the political advocacy, which of course is key, and we had our mayors very mobilized to call for this dialogue, but also the technical work we do and sharing practices and sharing what local governments are doing has not only helped other cities to learn from those and to enhance their capacity to react, but also it has increased the acknowledgement by other levels of government of the fact that, okay, so cities have innovative proposals, pragmatic proposals, and have something to bring to the table that we were not tackling in our policies.
And does that imply any kinds of institutional changes? I mean, I'm just thinking about this point about local governments having a seat at the table. So if a country is, let's say, I don't know, Tunisia is developing a national migration strategy and has set up within its national government a interdepartmental committee to do this, does that mean, I don't know, mayors of major cities attending some of these meetings? Or yeah, what does that actually look like?
We can imagine different scenarios and ways to structure that. First of all, local governments have also their own structures, they have their own associations, and indeed that they play a key role. And for us in the city to city, it has been important also to try to involve them as much as possible, because they have a power to multiplicate and to spread the knowledge that has been gathered within the program, but they also have the capacity to unite the voice of the local governments in one country. I think also when we speak about the policy coherence, we need to look at the diversity that exists. And I think that's the challenge there is that if you take a country like Tunisia, you have totally different migration patterns in Tunis, in Sfax, in Sousse, in the south of the country. They face different situations in terms of human mobility. Some regions host internal migration, some regions are more emitting migrants, some others are point of departure or transit. And indeed, that's where it is important to find the right mechanism to make sure that all this diversity of situation are reflected within the national policy. An important element is that we need to have a coordination. And again, here I insist on the fact that local government do not decide on policies, but they have a role in terms of coordination. And probably one of the best way to generate the mechanism is, first of all, to ensure the dialogue at the local level. I was mentioning before the city stakeholder groups, where we include different type of organization and institutions. And in many cases, the national authorities have their delegations in the different territories. And the first step is to make sure that the local governments are connected to these delegations of the state, that they could share the information, but also to make sure that the local governments, and Fatima was mentioning this topic, that the data collection and the knowledge. The first step is to make sure that the local governments have the capacity to have knowledge, data, on what is the case in their territory, to be able to showcase also the practices that the local solution that they found, and to inform through several different type of mechanism. It could be through reports, it could be through specific dedicated meetings, it could be having, as you were mentioning, having some concrete representations within the interministerial or the groups that are set up at national level to discuss the policies. I think here one mechanism alone is not enough. We definitely need to look at different modalities. In Tunisia, for instance, we also, in our case, city to city, try to work with the NAMAN network, which is a network of investigators, academics, that work on the topic of migration in Tunisia, and to try to make sure that all the information, the knowledge that we gather, the city profiles, are available to them, so they can use them when they prepare their draft to support the national authorities in their reflection. We try also to set up discussions in terms of the decentralization, as I was mentioning before, because at the end of the day, it's also looking at the framework, the legal frameworks, and what are the concrete competencies of the municipalities that we can also ensure that the space is open for this dialogue. And then, as I was saying before, also this coordination at the local level, it's not necessarily always going to the capital, what I want to say. It's to have a seat at the table do not mean that you have to go in the capital city and be in the ministry. This is important. This should happen. But also the information, and there is a lot of mechanism that exist, and national authorities have a lot of ways to gather information from the territories, and is to make sure that these mechanisms are effective, and that this mechanism involves and includes the right people, the right institutions to make the information go up and to allow a flow that goes up and down. It's, again, as Fatima was saying before, it's not only about being at the end of the chain, it's really ensuring that the information can flow from the beginning till the end of the process, meaning from the definition of the policies, from in their implementation and in their monitoring.
I wanted to ask, before we start to close this interesting conversation, I wanted to ask for your insights about how MC2CM works as a dialogue more broadly. I mean, ICMPD works a lot on different sorts of dialogues that bring together states, usually at the national level, and in this case, at the local level. We had the Rabat process, Secretariat's head, Audrey Jolivelle, on the show in episode 18 to talk about how interstate migration dialogues like the Rabat process work. And one insight that I recall from Audrey and my conversation was how one big value of a dialogue like the Rabat process is actually those kind of informal exchanges that take place in the margins of a lot of the meetings that bring together different state officials. And I was just curious to understand, I suppose, your insights from running the MC2CM program.
In the framework of city to city, I think that in general of most of the dialogues, the informal part of the dialogue is very important. And I totally agree with what Audrey said in your interview. There is a lot of things that happens in the corridors, in coffee breaks, in the way from to the field visit, in the way to the airport. These are very important moments. Sometimes you just share a cab with one or another to get to the airport, and you do the business during this half an hour trip. And sometimes you get more valuable information during this trip than during the 2 days meetings, where again, when you're within the formal meeting, you have a script, and everybody comes there to talk about its story, but you know, you are within the formal environment, and you don't want to go out of the marks. So definitively, the informality is very important. We lost a lot, I have to say, in the last year at this level. The situation, the COVID situation that has restrained us from traveling and pushed us to do each time more Zoom or other platform meetings, didn't allow us at least to have this informal part. But at the same time, it allowed us to reach out to more people and to different kind of stakeholders, because we have to say also that travel is not something that is easy to organize. It's not always easy to move people for a few days out of their responsibilities, because at the end of the day, these dialogues happen with people that have important responsibilities in their cities, in their institutions, and it's not easy to take them out for 3-4 days to come to cross the Mediterranean and be with us on site. Through the Zoom, we have been able to involve more of them, to have maybe more often access to the leaders directly, because if we speak about the mayors, of course, mayors were very happy and keen to participate to our events, but they also have very busy agenda. So, you know, you may get the mayor once, twice a year. You're not getting him every week to travel and to be in your meeting. And of course, the online setting, it's 2-hour discussion from his desk is something totally different in to set in his agenda or her agenda. So this is something I would say that was the positive aspect. It also allowed us to reach out to more civil servants. At the end, it's the same. The institutions, they are not that keen to allow all the staff to travel. You need to have a certain level. You need to have authorizations. It's also a complex administrative procedure. So at the end, through the online setting, we're also allowed to speak with other people from the municipalities, from the institutions, from the ministries that normally do not travel. And in the case of the online meetings, you can have them there. So I would say that probably the informal part is very important, and I totally agree on this. It is something that we all miss in our meetings. But at the end of the day, I think we did a good job in transforming and using the momentum and transforming our methodologies and trying to take the best of it, which is trying to reach out to maybe to have more high level representative leaders and be able to inform them in firsthand, to also be able to have concrete trainings. And we had one, for instance, a tailored session with the city of Rabat, where we really could work and speak directly with the civil servants that probably if we had to make them travel, we won't have that much of them participating, or migrants organizations that were with us there, private sector organizations that were with us in this meeting. So definitely this online setting also opened doors that we are still exploring, because it's still new, and that probably with the time we will also consider and don't see it as a bad thing as we think at the moment, because we all miss the human contact and you know, this moment where you take a coffee, where you can just have a small break, a small walk with someone and enjoy the moment to go out of the marks that normally you have within the meetings. But I think UCLG also organized a lot of these meetings, so probably Fatima have further insights on this.
Just to complement what has already been said, and of course very much in agreement with Lamine, some things cannot be replaced, other things have become opportunities, and beyond the variety of factors that we managed to engage and this capacity to widen the scope of participants to our activities, I would also say that some key learnings and opportunities, not only for us as a project, but I think in very real terms for the cities, was that this shift helped us finding pragmatic ways to foster dialogue on very tailored aspects that were like coming from the situation and changing every day. And as an example, for instance, when right after the outbreak, UCLD organized what we called live learning experiences that were weekly gatherings among local regional governments from all over the world on specific topics. We of course did one on migration as well. And what we saw there was very fresh solutions and concerns that were exchanged live among the different actors. And I would add a last further element that I see very relevant, which is our methods to promote dialogues also open a space for the very cities to do their own processes of dialogue, to shift their own methods of working whenever they deem it necessary. And we saw that this jumping into the digital world, and of course, like while identifying a lot of gaps that have become a policy issue in itself and an advocacy element in itself, we also see that by shifting this way of working, going from these personal and physical dialogues to digital ones, and having to learn about the tools and how these tools need to become a meeting room and also a shared mural or whatever other method. This is also an opportunity for cities to implement that in their daily work. So in a way, you're also helping a company that process of shifting the ways of work in the digital world, and also to identify the gaps that are existing and that need to be also in our agenda.
Well, glad to hear that you've been seizing the opportunities of COVID. And I also know from, I've been to a few of these Rabat process summits, and it seems like there's a lot of stress involved in for the secretariats in organizing these summits, you know, getting, I just remember colleagues being on the phone being like, oh, blah, 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 delegate has missed his flight, blah, 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 delegate didn't get his visa. So at least COVID has removed some of that stress. But I also briefly wanted to ask whether you would be able to share any, just to help us close out with a couple of interesting takeaways, whether you'd be able to share any examples of really interesting city initiatives that you've come across in your work.
Coming to my mind, we had a great dialogue end of March with the hosted virtually by the municipality of Grenoble, and I think what the city of Grenoble is implementing right now in terms of access to riding services is very impressive, and I could also speak about because they developed basically a methodology, and maybe Fatima then can give more information on this, but because I know they are working very closely on that example, but they really developed a methodology and an approach where they provide services to all independently of their status situation, and they consider whoever is inhabitant of the city as a local citizen. Actually, the discussion was about inclusive citizenship, and how we could re-understand citizenship within the urban world versus the citizenship within the national world. And this, I think, is one of, for me, a very inspiring initiative. I can also think about the city of Vienna that has been deploying a diversity department that is monitoring within all the other departments of the municipality how they deal with diversity. And I think that's a very, very impressive approach. When we go to the southern Mediterranean, we have great examples of municipality of Sfax that is doing a great work in mobilizing the civil society, supporting its civil society. They are even providing in projects that we're supporting legal advices to migrants to help them in their path toward having a legal status, finding jobs and having access to housing and different services. We have the municipality of Marsa that just created the one-stop shop to allow all migrants to find information and to have access directly to the information in their municipality. So that's something that for me is very inspiring. And we have the municipality of Rabat that is working right now on the employability of women migrants, and we're trying to do a work with them concretely on how we could work on the perceptions, on the narratives that comes around migration, to make sure that women migrants are also understood through their economic potential and you know, not clustered as working only in handcrafts or in traditional jobs, but they could also be understood as future entrepreneurs working in technology, working in business, and so on and so forth. And I think there is a lot of work that should be done there, both with the migrants themselves for their auto-esteem and with the entrepreneurs, so they to break a bit the barriers and the stereotypes they may have, and to also help them to understand all the opportunities that goes around that. But maybe Fatima, I'm sorry to launch you on this, but if you can explain a bit more about Grenoble, because I think that's one of the, for me, of the best practices that we have been seeing so far.
Yeah, I can tell that if I let you go on, I'm sure, Lamine, you could go on for another 20 minutes on the different practices that you've come across. But yeah, Fatima, tell us a bit more about Grenoble, which in my mind wasn't a very Mediterranean city, but go ahead, Fatima.
Well, we have this enlarged concept of the Euro-Mediterranean area, like comprising also cities like Dortmund that will have also really
interesting
practices on housing, for instance, and we've been working on that just very, very lately. And I still, I know that I have to speak about Grenoble, but I would still would like to acknowledge many others, because it's unfair to have to say just about this, because we have also on the cultural side, we have another organizing a festival about diversity and on the sort of African European identity of the city. We have also the city of Sevilla having transformed the whole a cultural building that had been abandoned into a really nice and interesting melting pot, or the city of Lisbon also promoting intercultural exchange through many many different initiatives that are part of the municipal plan. Barcelona, Valencia, and so on and so forth. And after this parenthesis, I'm mindful of time. Well, Grenoble has a really like an approach based on three principles, which is unconditionality, hospitality, and the third doesn't come to my mind at the moment in English. But still, like the idea is that whoever lives in Grenoble is a Grenoble. And this means that you have not only the right to have access to all the spaces of the city and all the activities and exchange with that, but also that you are empowered to fill out that duty. And this means that their strategy is a very comprehensive one, wherever any sort of local basic service or activity or so on provides a mechanism whereby, first of all, migrant communities participate in the designing of those policies, are part of that plan. Also, administrative barriers that could burden them in exceeding them are tackled and curved in different ways. And this is part of a collective effort whereby, for instance, some activities also provide the possibility for migrant communities to offer services to the city, to the municipality, in order to do their own contributions. And I would also like to say that the efforts done by Grenoble are part of, I mean, sometimes it's not just one city, and in France, they are very active and a founding member of the National Association of Hosting Territories and Cities. That is a sort of a coalition of cities that work to provide solutions to any sort of situation, even for instance, those villages where there are migrant communities that are just in transit and that are so just supposed to stay for a very few days, still providing them the necessary conditions to belong somehow to that village or city whenever they pass by. And this happens mainly through cooperation.
I really love that point about municipal citizenship, and reminds me of when I used to live in Montreal in Canada. I remember seeing some ads on bus stop shelters which said, "A Montréalais, c'est quelqu'un qui vit à Montréal." You know, a Montrealer, it's someone who lives in Montreal. And then I used to think, I live in Montreal, I'm a Montrealer, you know, so it made me feel a bit more welcome too. Anyway, thank you. We're out of time, unfortunately, but just to close, please tell us, how can listeners learn more about MC2CM and UCLCG? And also briefly, what is the future of the MC2CM program too?
Yeah, so for the future, we're looking forward to work maybe now much more into the national dimension. Our program until now has been really focusing on the regional dialogue. We started and we've been working little by little into implementing local actions also, creating knowledge at the local level. And what we look forward in the future is maybe to work much more on that mechanism that we were discussing before, to ensure that there is this dialogue between the local and national authorities is fruitful, is effective, and to find the best ways to run this dialogue. So that's for us in the future a very important element. And another very important element is also to accompany the local government in enhancing their capacities, to build partnership for capacities, because indeed, when we speak about migration governance at urban level, we also need to equip the local governments with the resources, but also with the capacities needed to work. And, you know, to work around diversity, to work in the migration context is not always easy. You also need to have some keys, to have some specific knowledge linked to that. So that's what we're looking forward in the future. And of course, continue supporting actions. I think local governments have are full of great ideas, full of great solutions, and our will is really to continue accompanying them into implementing this pilot initiative that hopefully can find an echo at the national and then even international level. And if you want to follow us to know more, you can follow us on Twitter at urban migration, at urban underscore migration to be precise, and also in Facebook, MC2CM, or in LinkedIn, also you find us as MC2CM. So stay tuned, you will have information on our upcoming events, you will have information on our publications, on cities practices, on case studies that we're developing, on city migration profiles, and all the knowledge that we gathered, as our aim is also to make it public and to share it with the wider audience.
Great, thank you very much. And Fatima, how can listeners connect with you and learn more about UCLG?
Yeah, well, just visiting uclg.org as in general for UCLG, and following our Twitter account, UCLG Lowbar or ORG. But I also want to finish with a more concrete update on our work on migration. Again, coming from the heart of the Mediterranean, but not only circumscribed to the Mediterranean city-to-city migration project. We are working now very closely with the island of Lampedusa, which is a member of United Cities and Local Governments, who is leading an initiative to build up a global charter of local and regional governments of all the regions of the world belonging to United Cities and Local Governments on human mobility and diversity, shifting this border-centered approach and this narrative on migration that hasn't worked that well into a more people-centered one, driven by communities and having dignity and human rights at the center. This process of co-creation is done also together with other partners. We are in the middle of it, and we hope that by the end of the year, this initiative will be launched. And I would really love all of you to stay tuned and know more about the process.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. We will link to all of those things in the show notes. Just once again, thank you, Fatima. Thank you, Lamine, for coming on the show and talking to us about that local migration governance perspective, which is so important. Thank you. All the best for your projects, and take care.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Migration and Diaspora Podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can check out the podcast website at loxanneharley.com/podcast. There you can subscribe to the mailing list or get in touch if you want to be on the podcast. Be sure to follow the podcast via your favorite podcasting platform and leave a review if you can. Thanks again, and see you next time.